Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge...
This is Tyler Orton, ready to go to Manchester by the Sea and explain things to some teenage folk over there.
I don't get it, Tyler.
Well, we'll dig a little deeper later on in this episode. Cam, of course, we are doing our kind of recap of the best of 2016 that this show has to offer. And really, I think for you and I, that really just means stuff that made us laugh.
For sure. We are kissing goodbye the 50th anniversary of Star Trek, much like Paramount and CBS did about a year ago.
Yeah, no kidding.
So we think, you know, why not do it in style, right? Unlike them.
I like how we have devoted more time to celebrating the 50th anniversary than the parent companies of this giant iconic franchise.
It's true.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to go through our clips as we do every year. We'll have some surprises here and there. We're going to have some discussion later about the year that was and the year that will be.
Yeah. So I definitely want to emphasize everybody, just stick around until the end, because I think it's a pretty big deal what we'll be announcing and what you guys can expect in the coming year. And I think it's only good news for you listeners and us as well.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
So, Cam, why don't we start off with, I think, one of our favorite clips, one that we actually maybe struggled to get all the way through as it was being recorded at the time, but this is one of my favorite moments from our episode discussing Sub Rosa.
Yeah, we did an episode called The Best Worst Episodes, and this... the sort of the theme of this episode was all those episodes that we love to make fun of and we can't stop watching, even though, you know, fans love to get together and say they're the worst episodes ever. And Sub Rosa is an episode that we've talked about just a little on this podcast. And I feel like we may not be able to talk about it again because I think we really sent it off with style this time.
Absolutely. Well, let's give it a listen. Why don't we reenact a scene? We have a transcript from the episode here. Cam, why don't you play Troy?
Okay.
And I'll play Crusher.
It's the role I was born to play.
Go for it, Cam.
Okay, so set is, we're in 10 forward, right? Okay. You dreamt you were in bed with someone?
Not exactly. I was in bed, but there wasn't another person in my dream. It was more like a presence.
You said you felt a touch?
A pair of hands. They were moving across my skin.
Like a caress?
Yes, and there was a voice. A man. He whispered my name. It was as if I knew him, or more like he knew me. He knew exactly how I liked to be touched. It was the most physical dream I've ever had. The sensations were very real and extremely arousing.
Frankly, I'm jealous.
I did fall asleep reading a particularly erotic chapter in my grandmother's journal. She wrote a very detailed description of her experience with Ronan.
Well, that's bound to cause a dream or two. So, shall we start going over the...
You know, I think he had a ring on one of his hands when he touched my shoulder, my neck. I wonder if I'll have another dream tonight.
I'd read two chapters.
Thank
and
you.
Scene.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Know, send us, you know, the Oscars later on. Oh, yeah. You know, we're all good for it. Cam, that was great.
That was spectacular.
Yeah, just like Ronan.
Mm. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So,
I'm feeling the vapors.
Yeah. So maybe that wasn't the best representative of what Star Trek has to offer.
No, I think it was.
Okay. But there are other examples of maybe not the greatest that Star Trek has to offer as well. We did an episode number 114 all about Star Trek's biggest losers. These
right.
are the characters that, for whatever reason, they didn't quite come to fruition the way I think the creators imagined them.
Right. Like we talked in that episode about Tapestry era Picard. Which was a lot of fun.
Yes.
But we talked about another character from the original series who loved to stare off into space really awkwardly. Okay, well, I want to talk about a guy from the original series. He has an episode named after him. That is Charlie X.
I don't know why he would be considered a loser.
This would be one Charlie Evans, who was played by Robert Walker Jr. And he's the young man who was sort of raised by aliens, is taken in by Kirk... And Kirk kind of has to tutor Charlie in how to be a human male. And Charlie is a hugely problematic character.
Well, yeah, he's got huge powers, for sure.
Sure, sure.
But he doesn't really know how to be a man yet, does he, Cam?
No. So there's a really awkward scene of Kirk in very tight spandex teaching teaching Charlie how to do rolls. But a lot of this episode is about him not only just, like, being hopelessly overshadowed by the pure masculinity of Kirk, but also just depicted scene and scene again in the most awkward of encounters with Janice Rand.
Well, just there was inappropriate touching involved that he did not quite realize that he could not get away with that.
Yeah, and every time he gets upset, he gets this really bizarre look on his face.
Cam, I cannot do it justice, but it looks like somebody is incredibly constipated at that point.
Yeah.
You know, I maybe he could have used some better directing.
Yeah, and apparently in the original script, there was an extra scene where he forces a young ensign to her knees for not looking like Janice Rand.
I'm glad they cut that one.
Yeah, it's just like, maybe it's in the Roddenberry vault.
Okay.
We'll be getting that just in time for Christmas.
Oh, dear Lord.
But now this episode, which I think is at least a fun episode, it's pretty goofy.
Yeah.
Is there anything redeeming about this character? Because I think we're supposed to sympathize with Charlie. Did you ever?
No, I found him very annoying, and just like, and the other thing I found annoying was just the writing, and like how I realized the 60s were a different time, but guys, come on, like, just the way that the whole conceit that Kirk has to teach him how to be a real man and how to really get women, and it was weird stuff going on here.
Yeah, it's very strange, and you can't help but, like, when they take Charlie away at the end, and they're like, well, okay.
Cam, get that look off your face.
I can't stop it.
Okay.
It's that beehive hairdo you have.
Well, I know. But on that note, look, we're talking about losers. There are some people that aren't necessarily losers, but I would call them kind of lame, especially lead characters.
You're talking about us?
I know. Mm. Look, we've got a Star Trek podcast. What can I say?
Very true.
Yeah, but on episode number 75, we actually delved into the lamest lead characters in Star Trek. And I think there were two in particular that we had like a pretty interesting conversation about. It wasn't us just making fun of them, mm-hmm. which we did, but it was maybe discussing a lot of the things holding these characters back.
Yeah, because going forward, we want to see characters who are well-formed on Star Trek. We don't want to see the old days of filling out a cast with 8 characters and then only servicing 4 of them.
I still don't understand why that was the formula for pretty much all the Star Trek series from Next Gen on. I think, say, for Deep Space Nine, were there any, like non-existent characters on that, like, in lead roles, really?
Not really, no.
Yeah, so, anyways.
Just Vedic Barao.
He's a lead in my mind.
Yeah.
And always will be. Okay, well, roll the tape there.
Chakotay is, you could argue, one of the leads of the series. Like, one of the main leads. At least at the outset.
At the outset, but you know what? It's very clear from season 4 onwards.
But that took 4 seasons!
Like, yeah.
I mean, like, what were they thinking with the first couple seasons?
No, it's really 2.5 seasons, though.
Yeah, and to me what's really bothersome is how they fall back, with his character in particular, on his ethnicity as his character.
Yeah, like, it's like he defines himself by, you know, being a rubber tree person.
Rubber tree person.
Who?
So it's like...
rubber tree person.
So it's like right there they are defining the character by his ethnicity and then being like, well, we can't relate to him because we don't know this, so we can only write stories about his ethnicity. That's not the case with Harry Kim. Not every episode is about him being Korean.
Well, no episode is.
Exactly. Because
they thought he was Chinese. And he's, in fact, from New Mexico.
But none of the Harry Kim stories that we've gone through have been about Harry Kim's ethnicity.
Yeah.
What is the problem?
I don't know.
It's not like, you know, it came to, when you got to a Harry Kim episode, it had to be set in Korea, using their cultures, where they're like, oh, man, I don't want to do that episode. I'm scared of offending someone, whatever.
Yeah.
No, that wasn't the case.
But the case with Chakotay is, like, there's no such thing as rubber tree people. It's a made-up Earth culture. Like,
yeah.
It's like them approaching, like, an alien culture. Like, Worf approaches his honor.
Yeah, and I mean, how original to go, like, the spiritual native approach.
Oh, God, I know.
I mean, you know, that's kind of embarrassing.
I'll just contend, though, that I don't think it's any coincidence that the white characters and actors were better served in all of Star Trek than I think the minorities, though. And I think, look at the writers' rooms.
Yeah.
There's really not that much diversity in those writers' rooms. They even admitted it on Deep Space Nine when they were writing Far Beyond the Stars,
And they all looked around the room, and, like, it's, I think there was, like, one guy who was Rene Echeverria, who is, like, half Latino.
Yeah.
Other than that, like, there's really no diversity, even when you're writing something that's so racially provocative, like Far Beyond the Stars. And that's going to be reflected on screen as well. And I think that's something that they really need to remedy in the upcoming Star Trek series.
I agree.
Well, okay. Well, speaking of lame leads, no, but you know, here's probably the captain that I think has perhaps the worst reputation among all the captains and fans, and somebody that it took me a little while to come around to. And I think we had an interesting discussion on number 99 about one Captain Archer.
Yeah, this was an episode we did with special guest Vicky Sue. She came on to help us rank the captains. And I look forward to doing more episodes like this because we had a lot of really good discussion about each captain and what they brought to the table and maybe what was even going against them in certain ways. And Archer had his struggles. So yeah, the reason for me, like, Archer came in at my number five is Archer is very much setting the template for what a starship captain would be. Yeah. So he makes a lot of mistakes. He's clunky. He's like, the Prime Directive obviously doesn't exist. He keeps talking about a directive that could exist one day.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, so much of his command is kind of based on, you know, hitting and missing.
Yes.
And then learning from his mistakes and kind of writing the book on how to be a starship captain. So, like, I don't want to be on his ship because I may die. so he learns a lesson.
Well, Cam, you and I are two for two right now because he was my number five as well for the same reasons. I just remember Strange New World, one of the first episodes of Enterprise, and that one crew member is beamed aboard and he's got all the twigs sticking out of him.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, this is not the kind of starship I want to be on, like, so early on. And really, what qualifications does Archer have? His dad invented Warp 5?
Yeah. And, like, he's taking his dog to, like, alien planets for ritualistic ceremonies.
And he won't stop talking about water polo.
Like, when his dog peed.
Yeah, on, like, a sacred tree.
Right.
It's just, like, you know, a lot of the comedy for Enterprise comes from that, is, like, them really not having a clue what they're doing.
Yeah.
But I just feel as, like, a leader, I think he's an okay leader. Like, he gives a good speech. He stops the Zindi threat. But, he doesn't have that, like, the real, like, strong command, like some of the ones we'll get to later.
I think he has strong morals, though.
He does.
I'll say this about, say, Archer, because I thought when the series started off that Scott Bakula was pretty stiff in the role, and I like Scott Bakula as an actor a lot. And he's having a bit of a renaissance in the last, like, decade or so with his career.
NCIS, yo.
I was thinking of Men of a Certain Age.
Oh, okay.
You know, that's a decent show on, I think, TNT. But,
right.
I thought he was stiff, and then I don't think it was until maybe season three that I really warmed up to him, and I kind of understood that, okay, this guy is far more nuanced than maybe we were led to believe in those first two seasons where it just kind of, and Cam, I know I joke about it on the podcast all the time, he gets his ass handed to him, like, every other episode. He's always got, like, a bleeding lip and a black eye. And it's like, is this really the captain that you want? He's just walking around, like, in crutches. And...
yeah, but he'll put himself out there.
That's true, which, as you pointed out, maybe Captain Kirk would not.
Oh, I don't know. Kirk will definitely get in fights.
Oh, yeah, okay.
A lot.
But will he do it
that's
to defend
a red shirt? That's because he's hot-headed, though.
True.
Not because of the situation.
Yeah. Well, Kirk can finish a fight. I don't know if Archer can.
Yes, that's true. True. Unless Porthos jumps in.
Yeah, only because there's cheese involved.
Well, speaking of people getting beaten up, in our episode Daddy Issues, that's number 96.
Our Father's Day Spectacular.
Yeah, we spoke about one particular father who maybe got knocked down on his ass more than once.
And it was a pretty great sight.
Why don't we start with Riker? Because I think that's an interesting one there.
Yes.
Riker grows up in a single-family household. It's his dad.
Kyle Riker.
Yeah.
Played by, Mitchell Ryan.
Yeah.
Who I will always know as the villain of Lethal Weapon.
Right, yes.
Yeah.
He's getting too old for this shit.
That's right.
Raising Riker.
He, like, has a grenade thrown on him, I recall, at the end. He's, like, trapped under a car.
Oh, yeah.
Danny Glover, like, rolls a grenade under. It's like, kaboom.
Ouch.
He was also, wasn't he, the guy's father on Dharma and Greg? Greg's father, I suppose?
I can't, that's quite the reach. I think it actually might be.
Well, I'm continuing the trend of us referencing 90s sitcoms.
Yeah, let's have a Blossom discussion. there's daddy issues in Blossom, too.
True.
Yeah.
A lot, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, this will be a bonus episode, our Blossom podcast. But okay, well, yeah. What's the issue here between Riker and Kyle?
Right. So in the episode, The Icarus Factor, Kyle comes aboard the Enterprise, and there's a lot of resentment towards Riker. He kind of wants like Riker's sort of. He wants to like open up his relationship with his son again because Riker says like they haven't talked in 15 years.
That's a long time to go not talking to your father.
Yeah.
Essentially, didn't we do the math a while ago and we realized that Riker, by the time he graduated the academy and became first officer of the Enterprise, he'd only been in Starfleet for 7 years.
Yeah.
So I think Riker stopped talking to his dad before he was even in Starfleet.
He says parted ways when he was 15.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's a long time.
That very much is.
If I parted ways with my dad when I was 15, I wouldn't have had a car to drive, so that would have been tough.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So, a lot of it is, it seems like a lot of the show is based on competition, Carl Riker with his son.
Yeah.
I
like how his name is totally turned into Carl
Riker. Kyle Riker. I thought I'd said that, and I was like, no, I think I'm just going to go with Kyle.
You can tell you said it when Tyler starts mocking you.
Yes, it's like competition, but it's like really weird, because there's a scene where he's talking to Troy, and Kyle starts hitting on Troy, and he's like, can't you tell we have the same taste in women? And I'm like, blah! It was disgusting. But then there's also like a romance in the past between Pulaski and Riker's father. She's like, I would have had him in a second.
He has quite the wide spectrum open when it comes to the ladies, I suppose.
Yes, and ultimately they have to settle their differences in an Anbo Itsu martial arts match. What I love about Star Trek is, no matter how like disciplined and intense the martial art on Star Trek, I know I could do it better.
Oh yeah. Well, you know what? After I saw this episode, I suggested instead of typical family therapy that the Ortons do this instead. Yes. Nobody joined me.
No, it's like American Gladiators, but so much worse.
Well, speaking of surly old men, on episode number 80, we discussed Time's Arrow, one of my favorite TNG two-parters. For those who haven't watched the episode in a while, I really push you to go back and rewatch it. I think it's one of the strongest TNGs.
It's definitely one of the most consistent. And we had a special guest on that episode, Tony Galush, who every time he comes on, we have an absolute blast. And usually he gives us good fodder for our best of the year episode. And this year was no different. And how could it be with a character like, well, the one we're going to talk about now?
I thought that kind of subplot was cool and dark, you know, these aliens that feed on human misery at the end of life, and it was balanced out with the crazy cat and mouse game of Mark Twain and Data and Guinan.
Doing like the most badass leap through a temporal vortex you could ever imagine.
He's like going with them!
He literally looked like he was trying to do the Superman flyby as he jumped into that vortex. It was like, whoa.
Obviously a stuntman.
I don't think so.
There's a Sonic scene in that voice with Mark Twain where, it, you know, Guinan has her, like, literary party or whatever, where he's just walking around in a circle, blithering, and I'm like,
smoking cigars?
How would anyone want to, like, be around this guy? And the thing is, they play it up as he's someone that people really like having around. Like, he's this, like, curious old curmudgeon. And I'm like, this guy's a jerk.
But I did kind of like that initial conversation when they're just talking about man's place in the universe. I was like, oh, this is kind of interesting. I was with Mark Twain, and then he kept talking and talking and talking. And yeah. Here's the thing. Take away that dumb voice that the actor was speaking with. Do you think that Mark Twain or Samuel Clemens could have been like a character that you would not use the word insufferable to describe?
Well, I think he could have been, even without the voice, a little bit more intriguing. The voice doesn't help. You know, just a note, whenever anyone so far on your show here has tried to imitate Mark Twain, I've noticed on your computer it's set the levels out of control, so you guys are going to have some difficult editing to do. Just the actor, I don't know if you noticed, it was like every time he talked, his hands were shaking at his side. I don't know if he was meant to do that. He kind of had the look of an actor who had won an audition, mm-hmm. and then was, you know, had given his lines and was, you know, what, like a dependable TV character actor that could walk in, stand on an X, turn towards the right camera, and give a line without really blowing the budget.
Well, did this feel like a caricature to you as opposed to an actual character?
But the problem is like, caricature of what exactly? It's because it's not like we have, like, audio recordings of, like, Twain's voice from back in the day.
Could there be? They used to record them, like, on records.
Yeah, but that would have been, like, the 20 years, 30 years later.
Yeah.
We're way too, you know, ahead of time to be doing that.
I like the reference to Halley's Comet. That was a nice touch.
You ever get hit by Halley's Comet?
I will say this about the Mark Twain character. I did like the scene of him talking to Deanna Troi. Or they're just kind of talking about his time versus hers. Like, I thought that was... He actually dialed it down a bit in that scene. Like, he's kind of, like, just more contemplative. He wasn't kind of doing this grandstanding act that he does in every other scene of the episode.
Sure. I just remember him unleashing a very weird sound when the bullion walked by him out of the turbo lift. He was just like...
He was like Yoda.
Yeah.
Strange you are. Yeah, like...
And the gold with Time's arrow did not end there, Cam.
No, it did not. Another note of trivia. Marina Sirtis went on her honeymoon between the filming of these two two-parters, so she's much more tan in the second part.
I blame the San Francisco weather.
Mm-hmm. And
Rice-A-Roni.
Rice-A-Roni.
The San Francisco tree.
Oh, of course.
Come on, Cameron.
And
I'm gonna ask her that in Vegas.
That would be amazing. Yeah.
And Cam, I think we've got even more surly old men, including one of my favorite captains from Star Trek.
Why do we relate so well to surly old men?
It's our destiny.
It's true. It's sad.
So Cam,
I want to talk about Bernie Casey as Calvin Hudson.
Yeah,
I think he's fantastic in this episode. I love that he's sort of like Sisko. He's sort of this career Starfleet guy, but he looks like he's seen some things. He doesn't have that sort of TNG sort of Superman quality, you know?
Sure.
He looks kind of...
He's no Ronnie Cox. That's Superman quality that Ronnie Cox possesses. Yes, Captain Jellicoe. Okay, Cam, I think we'll stick on that surly old character path that we're on right now and talk about, I think, one of the fans' favorite characters, Lieutenant Worf.
Yeah, he's lovably surly, not like a Jellicoe.
Yeah, but he can be, I guess, creepy sometimes when you consider his personal life.
Say what?
But this episode also features my sister on the show, Geneva Orton, who actually watched Next Generation with me all the time back in the day when I was first airing. So it was always great to have her on and get her perspectives on episodes she probably has not seen in about 25 years.
Right. And Birthright, not a great two-parter, we agreed.
No.
But it actually inspired, I think, a really fun episode of the podcast. One I enjoyed far more than some of the ones maybe about two-parters that I liked a lot more.
Absolutely.
Cam and I were talking about this a little bit earlier. I did find Worf's relationship with the child on the planet quite creepy.
Really?
So there was that element.
You have a tough time believing that he fell in love in 48 hours?
Yeah, in 48 hours with someone that may have been 19.
Yeah,
maybe.
Worf's age comes into question for me now because they established that that Kittimer was 25 years ago.
Okay.
So Worf would have been maybe 3, 4, 5 at the time. Does Worf strike you as a 30-year-old?
No.
Well, and how old is Alexander at this point in the show?
Well,
maybe 8?
No, because that's how old maybe the actor would be, but like the actual character, Klingons grow faster. I believe he would have been born season 2, season 3.
Mm-hmm.
And so at this point, Alexander would have been like 5 or 6. So Worf would have been a father around like 24, I would say.
So they grow faster.
Yeah.
So how old is this girl then?
That's a very good question, because they also established in episodes like family that when Worf was 8, he was beating up teenagers at school,
right?
You know, so
You?
Is this episode, like, should it be called, like, Worf's Midlife Crisis?
I'm just picturing that Father of the Bride Part 2 and how he goes...
I was too.
Yeah, but how he goes and gets his hair done and he's, like, bitchin'. That's how I picture Worf.
It should have ended with Worf in, like, a Corvette.
Obviously. No. Joaquin Alexander down the aisle.
I think the problem is that I didn't care about any of those Klingons.
No.
At all. Talk, it was really annoying. And then Bael, she's not much of a character. Like, she's there to kind of just be wooed by Worf.
He wasn't his Jack, you know?
To his Jack.
A romance for the ages, Cam. They put so much emphasis on this romance that, like, did anybody really care about it at all?
No, I thought it was creepy. I cared in a bad way. Yeah. I cared in that I thought it was weird. So it bothered me.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I think it's one thing if they had just kind of made it as, like, an attraction. But it's like, he emphasizes that he fell in love.
Well, and then when she goes to stand in front of, you know, she goes to stand with him and the other Klingon youth and... to, you know...
get shot down.
To prevent, I guess, him from being killed. So she's standing in front of her father. And for someone that you've known for 48 hours, and such a short amount of history that he's told you about, to then decide that you're going to stand in front of your father who's holding a deadly weapon, just seems a bit strange.
I'd be pissed off if I was, like, her father.
Yeah,
I'd be
exactly.
Like, oh, God, really?
Yeah, I know. And she's, like, cuddling up to Worf in front of him. Like, the father shows no reaction, which I found really strange. Like, you'd think... he would just be like, you've got to be kidding me. Yeah. Like, this is ridiculous. But... she's like, Daddy, you don't understand. I'm in love. It's like, it's just a bit much.
Well, I'm glad Worf is able to escape from his immortal enemies in that episode, Birthright.
It was scary. It was tense there.
I was so worried he would not make it out alive.
Yeah.
But speaking of Worf's immortal enemies, of course we have the Tribbles in... Cam, you and I discussed the Tribble Trilogy in episode number 117.
Wasn't that just like yesterday?
Pretty much, yeah. You know. But it actually, I revealed something to you that you never knew.
Mm-hmm, you sure did.
A secret talent of mine. Why don't we just play the clip?
I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge...
this is Tyler Orton, gobbling as much grain as I can find.
I thought you were going to be like... That's pretty good. Wow, Tyler. Thank you. The Tribble Orton.
Yeah. That's what they called me in junior high.
I'm impressed. So this week's conundrum, tracing the Tribble Trilogy.
Well, speaking of interesting sounds, Cam, as part of the 50th anniversary of Star Trek, we actually got to go to Star Trek The Ultimate Voyage, which was... traveling orchestra around North America playing iconic Star Trek scores. Is quite the experience.
Yeah, it was actually a really fantastic experience. Like, we'd gone and seen several orchestra concerts at the Vegas Con.
Yes.
Doing the Star Trek music, and I wasn't expecting that much out of the Ultimate Voyage, but it actually gave me a lot more than I expected, both on stage and off.
Whatever do you mean, Cameron?
I don't know. Let's listen to the clip. First up, we want to talk about Star Trek, The Ultimate Voyage, the concert experience that's touring around. Tyler and I just went and saw it a couple nights ago.
Is that, the Center for Performing Arts in Vancouver on Saturday, April 9th, I think?
Yes.
Sure, sounds good. I did not realize it was going to get as rowdy as it did, Cameron.
Mm-hmm.
They're fisticuffs, they were drunken patrons. This is all at the Star Trek Symphony, and we are not joking, are we?
No, we had two drunk people sitting behind us who... there's that famous Simpsons joke about Lisa saying, who'd come to our concert to boo us? Well, these two people came to basically boo the Star Trek concert experience.
Yes, they would not shut up. Like, they kept talking and talking throughout this. And Cam, like, they were kind of far enough away from me, but you could hear what they were saying. Like,
they were driving me crazy.
Yeah, share with the listeners, like, the kind of comments that they would have to say.
Basically, anytime it was anything other than TNG, they would just, like, ridicule it the entire time. Just be like, who cares about this stupid show? No one likes it, whatever.
Yeah.
Even when it was an original series, he's like, oh, yeah, that's that shitty show that was kind of like Batman.
And this is during,
wow.
The Amok Time music, which is some of the most iconic Star Trek music ever.
Yeah, they were miserable, but they left at the halfway point, thank God.
Well, that's the thing. Like, during the intermission, like, everybody in all our row, like, we were saying, if they come back and they keep talking, oh, oh, we're gonna have, you know, some shenanigans, or I don't know. But like, I literally turned my head and stared them down three times, and just no reaction from them.
Yeah.
So they kind of, you know, ruined at least the first half. Not ruined the first half for me, but they're very annoying. They
were a distraction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
yes, during the Borg music from Best of Both Worlds in the first half, a fist fight broke out on the opposite end of the arena as us.
It was bizarre. We didn't know what was going on. We just heard yelling.
And screaming.
And, like, we turn over, and, like, this... I just saw a guy standing up, and I didn't know what was going on. Did you have any idea?
I had absolutely no clue what was going on.
So what happens is we go down to the bathroom during intermission, and then our friend Tom, he's been a guest on the show before. He did the Insurrection podcast with us, as well as, you know, your guide to a Star Trek convention.
And Unification.
Unification, most recently. Yes, I forgot all about him. but, yeah, and then he saw, I guess, the victim of this attack washing his face. He's bleeding from the eyeball or something?
He's bleeding from the face.
From the face, yeah. And apparently, so our good friend slash fallen comrade, Benjamin Yong, he was at the concert as well. You know, there's another former guest of ours at the concert, one Nick Eagland. I mean, guys, it was a who's who of subspace transmission at this concert here.
And people would see them all and be like, who's who?
But I was talking to Benjamin Yong yesterday, and he revealed, like, he was actually closer to the fight than we were.
Right.
And so during the intermission, the VPD, they show up, and Ben's there, like, watching this all go down, and there's a guy icing his hand. And so I guess the cops said to the guy, having a fun Star Trek concert, I see.
Oh my God.
Ben kind of wandered away after that, but it was very interesting that, yeah, the guy stuck around after punching somebody else in the face at a Star Trek concert. So you were the one throwing his fists around.
Well, guilty as charged.
Okay. Well, you know, why don't we stick on that thread about how, you know, people celebrated the 50th anniversary this year. In episode number 92, we dive deep into Star Trek Beyond, and we discuss... I guess what exactly this film was about.
Yeah, well, at this point, the movie hadn't quite come out, and it was me trying to determine what the movie was about.
You had difficulty.
I did have great difficulty. And, you know, I'm happy to say it did clear up a couple months later when I saw the movie. But it's interesting to look back at just how clueless I was once upon a time.
Yeah, once upon a time.
Okay. Yeah, and I mean, like, I don't want to, like, crap on the movie and say it looks bad, because I don't think it looks bad in any way, shape, or form. It's just weird to me that, like, the movie hasn't given me a hook as to what it's even about, other than the ship has crash-landed and there's a lot of fighting. Like, that's fine, but, you know, you think of, because, you know, it's very easy to say, well, it's a summer action movie, what more do you want? But, you know, look at, like, some of the Marvel trailers, look at, you know what, God, I can't believe I'm saying this, look at the Batman v Superman trailer. Like, they sold what the, sort of the central story of the movie is.
Okay, but that's right in the title.
Fair enough. But they presented what the conflict was, at least initially in that movie, because God, did it get muddy by the end. But, you know, the Marvel stuff really sells what the story of the movie is. Like, I understood what Civil War was about when I go into Civil War.
Right in the title as well.
Well, also true. But, you know...
Okay, this one should have been called Star Trek Kirk versus Krall.
Star Trek Crash Landed.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. It's just weird to me that, like, I know what Independence Day 2 is about.
It's about a resurgence. It's right in the title, Cam. So, okay, this film is about Beyond.
It's just weird to me that so much of these summer movie trailers, I walk in, like, having an idea of what I'm watching. Whereas this film, I still don't. It looks like I'm watching the Enterprise crash land on a planet and engaging in, like, an action battle with, you know, an evil alien.
Well, obviously, we're thinking a lot about the future of Star Trek at this period of time. So I think we can stick on that particular path. And when we look at possible revivals of Star Trek that we discussed, number 79, episode 79, that was a good one. We talked about the possibility of reviving Star Trek The Next Generation, seeing who we could bring back from that old cast. I think you had kind of a good pitch to, you know, bring back some old cast members.
Yeah, I thought it would be fun to, you know, really try and bring the old crew up into the modern days. Hollywood loves to do now, you know, with, like, Star Wars The Force Awakens, or all these movies where they bring back old casts. What would happen if we did that with, say, TNG?
Yeah, but hey, you know what? Technology's advanced, you know, since Scorpion King, Cam.
In some ways, yes.
In some ways.
But you can still get terrible-looking motion capture. Hell, look at, was it Snoke from the new Star Wars film?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that movie had a lot of money behind it. I don't know that the Star Trek revival would even have that for a major character. Snoke's in, like, 5 minutes of the movie.
So Data looks worse than Snoke.
Yes.
Here's the thing. The only way I see Spiner coming back is if he can Snoke it and provide his voice in the motion capture. It just doesn't make sense for us to see a chunkier Data, you know, it would just be weird.
Doesn't this lose a lot, though, considering Data is for many the favorite character on the show?
Oh, yeah. But that's why I'm saying that's why you'd Snoke him. He would be motion capture, so he would be there.
There is no way that they're going to drop money for a motion capture character in this Star Trek revival.
Not a very good looking one. A real cheap looking Data. I could totally see them doing that.
What if they just put a mannequin on wheels and they pull, pull it through scenes?
I love it.
And they'll be like, Data's been deactivated again.
Okay, sure. I love that idea even better than Snoking it.
Okay.
Okay, cool.
So Patrick Stewart, you think is no way, huh?
No way. He's too busy with Blunt Talk. But honestly,
is he that busy with Blunt Talk? Is Blunt Talk going to keep going?
I think here's from what I understand that it was signed for 2 seasons. I don't really hear much buzz about it from critics and ratings wise. I think like 12.
But if he's doing 12 episodes, I mean, what's to stop him from, like, you look at The X-Files, Duchovny's on another show, Aquarius, but he's managing to fit in 6 episodes of X-Files. Why couldn't Stewart do 6 episodes of Star Trek?
Because I don't think he's interested at all. Yeah. I think the only reason that we saw him at the convention last year is because he's there to promote Blunt Talk.
Yeah, I think that's true.
I just really think Patrick Stewart could not care less at this point. You know, if he was going to bring back Picard, it'd have to be for a movie.
Yeah.
We're talking about TV revivals. I don't see Patrick Stewart coming back. Now, Tom Hardy, could we get him to replace Patrick Stewart?
Not a chance.
Okay.
So does this mean we have to get a mannequin of Picard also on wheels to pull around?
Is it just going to be like a stop motion version of Star Trek?
I just picture it just being like only Jonathan Frakes, but with like all these like mannequins of other characters and him doing the voices for all of them.
I'm picturing that scene in Home Alone where like he wants to make it look as if there's a party going on in the house, so he's like pulling on levers to make like stand-up cardboard copies of things like moving around, and
I was actually
Jingle Bell Rock playing throughout the ship.
I was thinking similarly, although I was thinking of the scene in Freddy Got Fingered where he has all the sausages. He's daddy, do you want some sausage? And it strings on all the mannequins.
It makes sense to me. Well, that's no Grand Moff Tarkin there, Cam.
Get out of my head.
But, you know, obviously we're thinking a lot about the possibility of bringing Star Trek back to television. And one other idea is that was floating around for a while that Star Trek Discovery could be an anthology series. So we spent an episode, still a very fun episode to listen back to, even though now we know that Discovery's not about that. But
we found that out, I think, like a week or two after we dropped that episode. It was like, yeah. Well, don't we look foolish?
We really did.
We look foolish all the time.
Well, though, yeah. So, just more so than usual here. Yeah, but we had guest Andy Chan on for Star Trek the Anthology episode, and we're pitching ideas here. So here's one that I'm kind of fond of, mostly because I pitched it myself. I'm pitching more Cardassians. What are your thoughts about more Cardassians in the Star Trek universe, Andy?
I like the Cardassians a lot. One of my favorite episodes is Chain of Command.
Yes.
Right.
And I love all those Garrick episodes about revealing his past and stuff. I think they're very interesting characters. Or they're written very well. A lot of them are. What I'd like to see, if it were a series set on a Cardassian ship, I'd like to see it where, from their point of view. So not kind of like them figuring out that, oh, why are we doing this? We're the bad guys here. I want to see it from their point of view where they think they're doing all the right things.
Right.
They're the ones that are being oppressed. They're the ones that are being bullied around in the Alpha Quadrant.
Well, you understand their worldview as opposed to them just saying, hey, wait, our worldview is wrong. You actually understand why they believe their worldview is correct.
Yes.
I think that's great.
Yeah.
What about, I don't know, potential, because here's the thing, I'm kind of torn. I almost pitched an idea of a post-Dominion Cardassian set series where I kind of like the idea of maybe Cardassia is the new Berlin.
Right.
There's a lot of issues.
Cabaret.
Yes. But look, if it's occupied by Romulans, Klingons, and Federation, it could be maybe a bit of a spy story going on. They're trying to rebuild. Maybe you might have a Garak cameo. He's still left on the planet.
He's running a cabaret.
Yes. Maybe you could split the anthology season. Maybe it's a 26-episode anthology series. Okay. This run around.
This is getting ambitious.
What if you had two parallel stories and then they combine, they join in the end?
I know what you're going back to. You want Mirror Universe Cardassian.
Here's the question. Do you think it's possible to do this anthology and make it feel watchable to people who didn't watch Deep Space Nine?
No.
Yeah, that's the issue, I think.
I don't care. I'm making it for me.
Early in the year, we had a really interesting episode. It was inspired by a Nerdist podcast episode with Tarantino, where he talked about how he had a lot of interest in Star Trek.
And is this Bruce Tarantino?
Yes, Bruce.
Yeah.
You know, he makes that small independent film that no one saw. It was about fishing, I think.
Angling, to be more specific.
Right. It was sort of a quasi-sequel to River Runs Through It.
I thought it was an explicit prequel.
Very explicit.
Yeah.
You don't want to know what's in that movie.
Oh, dear.
But we did an episode with Patrick Johnson about what would happen if Quentin Tarantino tackled Star Trek. And we came up with some interesting results, one of which was not planned in advance. It was very just like a moment of inspiration that really led us down a path, I think, that actually proved to be, I think, possible in an alternate universe.
I got it.
Okay.
Is Tarantino making a Mirror Universe movie?
Oh. That would be amazing. That would be a fun movie to watch, you know. Would it be kind of like just a solid Mirror Universe one-off, much like in A Mirror Darkly that we saw in Enterprise, or do you think it would be kind of a crossover that we saw in, say, Deep Space Nine or the original series?
I think the original series one would be the most interesting one. I mean, I enjoyed it as the DS9 kind of plot point, the way they made that work.
Yeah.
But I feel like in the end there was a reason why I feel like there was a reason why they used the crossover stuff in DS9 as often as they did.
Yeah.
But it was very much its own self-contained thing, and it didn't feel actually as aggressive as it was in the original series. And I think there are so many, you know, evil Spock, but you know, Spock the wise man who changes everything, and as we find out later on, but I think exploring that Enterprise would be so interesting.
I think, yeah, Kim, you bring up a really good idea, because here's the thing. Maybe it touches a lot of points that Tarantino would be dealing with already. If it's the violence factor, that's part and parcel of that particular universe. We also have, I think we could deal with a lot of like racial issues going on, because that's very much like a totalitarian society.
Yep.
There's a lot of divisions between, say, the Terrans, the Vulcans, and then like other species throughout that particular universe. I think let's pitch it to Tarantino next time we run into him.
Beautiful.
This is also open storytelling terrain. I mean, he could do whatever he wanted.
Yeah.
No one is going to be like, hey, you can't do that in the Mirror Universe, right? Whereas if he said, I want to have Chekhov killed in this moment, they're going to stand up and be like, no, you know, we've got this actor signed to two more movies or whatever. We do not want to do that. But if it's Mirror Universe, who cares?
And you can almost cast anybody you want in any role, because it doesn't have to be bound by what they looked like in the original series.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I just want everybody to be walking around with goatees on no matter what.
Of course.
It doesn't matter. Well, Cam, we'll see if that comes to fruition with the casting of one Chris Hemsworth to play George Kirk. Mm. Will he appear in the Mirror Universe? We also have Scott Movie Mance, of course, from Access Hollywood. He was on the Engage podcast, the official Star Trek podcast with one Jordan Hoffman recently. He actually pitched that same idea there with bringing George Kirk back through the Mirror Universe, which is something that I mentioned a few weeks earlier as well.
Right,
so it's interesting. I like the idea. You were pretty ho-hum on it, I do recall.
I was, yes. I was a bitter Betty about it.
Well, you know what, Cam? We're starting to get into the final run here, but you and I, we haven't always seen eye to eye on everything here.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about the fact that you and I don't always agree on things. We just...
I think we do.
Cam, no. What are you talking about?
I don't know.
Whatever. Okay. I'm obviously right here. Mm. But look, sometimes we disagree.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
We do. And it's always amusing, because I don't think you and I, as friends, disagree all that much in a heated sort of way.
No, we usually spend more of our time disagreeing with what Ben Yong says.
Yes.
Fallen co-host Ben Yong.
But here's a fun moment where you could tell I'm actually getting annoyed with Cam.
And I'm purposely badgering you?
Because I think you knew how to push my buttons late at night, but here you go.
Late at night?
Well, it was like, relative, I'm up at like 5 a.m. every
morning.
That's true. So if it's like 9:45 p.m.
Right.
That's the home stretch.
Taking us back to Surly Old Men.
I know.
So this was from episode 83. It was called Why Do Admirals Suck? And we talked about a lot of the crucial ones that you all would know and maybe some of the ones you'd prefer to forget. But we touched on, or I should say, I touched on one that Tyler was not interested in talking about.
Because he's not an admiral.
Well, let's just get to the clip.
I did want to throw a reference towards, actually, another Commodore, which is Commodore Robert April in the Counterclock Incident.
Well, Cam, Commodore is not an admiral, and Commodore Admiral Robert April is non-canon, as it appears in the animated series.
I would still like to talk about him, because, again, this is a case of someone being brought in who's superior to Kirk, and is he the most heroic depiction of an admiral we've seen?
No, because he's not an admiral.
I mean, of a superior, I should say.
Well, Captain Picard is a superior officer to Commander Riker. Cam, we're talking about admirals here. I'm sorry, man.
Superior to a captain.
Well, Robert April was quite old, so he's got that going for him.
But he saved the day, ultimately. When the Enterprise, everyone on the crew is getting younger and younger, we get to see April become what he used to be and save, ultimately, the day.
Ultimately, if this was a canon representation of Star Trek, Cam, you're the one who keeps bringing up like storybooks and like comic books
Cam
and
fiction.
Like Cam fiction. Yeah, like I was just kind of like I don't know. Hey, Robert April, he's appeared in one of the funniest episodes of Star Trek ever.
Robert April is, we should say, though, like a canon character.
Yeah.
So, and this is the only depiction we have of him, I'm saying. So, I'm going to assume that the character, like, when they write him, they are at least imagining this as being what the character is, to a certain degree. Would you agree with that?
Sure, yeah, like...
I mean, would you say
look, I could write my own, like, depiction of Robert April. He could be a total jerk. It's as canon as...
I'm just saying, this glimpse of April we get, would you say he is the most heroic, sort of superior-to-captain character we've gotten?
No.
Well, I wish I could say that was the only uncomfortable fight we had on the podcast, Cam, but there's one more. I don't know how listeners take it, but I remember at the moment... You and I, this is probably the most heated discussion we've ever had in our friendship, and we both looked like idiots at the end when we looked up the fact that you and I were actually both wrong about this next issue we're going to discuss.
Yeah, unlike the Robert April argument, there was no right side in this argument. It was two people who didn't know what they were talking about fighting over...
Yeah, so if you want to relive this in its entirety, go to episode number 106. This is from How Star Trek Changed the World.
Fittingly, the 50th anniversary honorary episode that we chose to have this fight.
Yeah, this is how we honored Star Trek.
With one of our most memorable moments, maybe of all time, on this podcast. And I hope it translated at home, at least to you could feel the awkwardness. Because I was laughing about it the whole way home after recording this.
And, well, think about the domestic growth so far of Star Trek Beyond.
Yeah.
Do you think... I mean, we've talked about the marketing for that film.
Yeah.
I really think that they misfired by not wanting to acknowledge its 50 years. Just what kind of a monumental accomplishment that is to endure for so long.
Because they've done business. I don't even want to say good or bad. It's business,
yeah.
I suppose.
I don't think there's anything wrong with saying it's the domestic box office was disappointing for them.
Yeah. But we're waiting to see the overseas total gross. We're going to do an episode in the future on sort of the future of that franchise, and we'll kind of go more into depth on that.
I think they have exceeded, like, overseas the grosses for either Into Darkness or 2009.
No, I don't think they've done either yet.
No,
I've seen it's pretty
have.
Low. I don't think they've even cracked 100 million yet, because it hasn't opened a lot of major territories.
No, they have. I think it's around 150 at this point.
Which is, I mean, Into Darkness was 400 million overseas money.
Are you looking worldwide?
Just total? Worldwide, not taking out the North American.
I think I have to be honest. I think you're mistaken.
I am not.
I am 100% sure. I was literally reading a story yesterday about this, and one of the stories had said that they had exceeded the gross, I forget if it was 09 or Into Darkness at that point.
Because I know 09's total worldwide gross, including North America, was $375 million.
Okay, but you're saying... but
this, it didn't do well overseas. But it did much bigger. It did about 250.
Cam, you just said Into Darkness grossed minus North America $400 million. I don't think Star Trek Into Darkness grossed $600 million.
Maybe you're right, actually.
Yeah. So from...
we're giving just factual incorrect information at this point.
No, you are.
Yes, I am, yes.
I'm fairly certain, like, so far, Beyond has outgrossed worldwide one of the two last films. So, mm-hmm. again, disappointing numbers, at least domestically, but it's been like that for pretty much, like, most of the box office film, or most of the box office throughout this past summer.
Well, Cam, I think that's a good way to kind of recap the year. But guys, I should emphasize, go back and re-listen to some of our episodes throughout the year, and we can go into more depth, I think. This is mostly just stuff that we found amusing throughout the year.
Sure, yeah. Well, before we move on to kind of the next section of the podcast, why don't we kind of sum up some of the three of your favorite episodes from this past year of podcast recording? Not all episodes are made for great, you know, 1 minute, 2 minute clips. So I thought it would be interesting to kind of shine a light on the episodes that you were the most proud of this past year.
Yeah, you know, we mentioned it earlier, but I really like the What If Quentin Tarantino Directed Star Trek episode. That was number 73.
Mm-hmm.
Also, maybe it's recency bias here, Cam, but I thought we ended the year with some pretty strong episodes as well. I thought it's number 116, The Evolution of the Borg. That was a really strong one. I think you and I, we finished that one off, and we both looked at each other and said, like, that was a good episode. And that happens to us maybe, I'd say, once every 3 or 4 months.
If that.
If that.
Usually I walk home just shaking my head in regret.
Yeah. You're like, I can't believe he doesn't like Commodore April.
I love episodes where we get to examine, like, an alien species or a particular segment of Star Trek and really do a deep dive on it. And I think that was a really good example.
Yeah. One last one that I'll mention here is episode number 111. And that's characters we want to see on Star Trek Discovery. We're starting to kind of get a lot more information about the next series. And it's just, to me, it's kind of like quintessential subspace transmissions. Like, we just are able to pick at some fun ideas and really go there with it. And this was just kind of a fun episode, I thought.
Right. Well, three of my favorites from this year. One of them we've already referenced in this episode, and that is the episode 95, Best Worst Episodes. I really love when we can just make fun of bad hours of Star Trek, and I thought this one offered a lot. We obviously had the clip of Sub Rosa earlier in this, but there was another reenactment that was a ton of fun, and I'm really looking forward to 2017 when we'll do kind of a sequel. Not maybe our picks, but maybe some of your picks. Another episode that I think might have been my favorite to record this year. It was episode 105. This was the Klingon Bloodwine Games we did in Las Vegas. We had a packed group of people in that in our hotel room in the Rio Hotel, and we did like a live game show of Star Trek trivia and some really like ridiculous categories. There was a certain excitement that we don't normally get from the podcast of having like an audience there.
Yeah, mostly it's just my girlfriend sitting on the couch with a real pissed off look on her face.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
She can't turn the TV on.
Exactly. We had a large group of people with pissed off looks on their faces.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, there was clapping, there was kind of playing off the crowd, and that to me was just like really energetic to do, and I had an absolute blast. I can't wait to do it again. And for that one, I made a Klingon Bloodwines opening theme that I actually really liked.
I dig it. I think, did you not pass it on to one of our friends as well? And was that one Stephanie Ip?
Oh, yeah, I did. That's right.
I think she liked it, too.
Yeah, she was a big fan.
Yeah.
So, lastly, I really love the episodes we do where we do deep dive on characters. And we've only done a couple, really. We did a Picard one back in, I think, our first year or something. But this year we did two. And one of them was the Janice Rand episode from a couple weeks ago. But the one that really was a lot of fun was with fallen co-host Benjamin Yong. It was episode 82, For the Love of Wesley, where we talked about Wesley Crusher and all the decisions that went into making him the character that he is.
I can only imagine that there's enough Traveler talk for the three of us.
But that's about the last time we'll mention the Traveler on this episode, right?
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
So guys, look, we kind of hinted at it at the beginning. Big announcement for us. And I don't know if you guys maybe noticed midway through the year, we were having some audio issues. And I think that's our big announcement, Cam.
Yeah, that we had audio issues. And that I would be at home editing and just weeping over my keyboard.
Ready to beam up, Jim.
Energizing.
Well, surprise listeners, we've got a brand new sound setup that we have for you guys. It cost us more than a pretty penny around Christmas time.
Thanks for all the donations, guys.
Yeah, I really appreciate it.
Yeah, we're swimming in money here.
But, you know, I think what it does show is that we're invested in this podcast ourselves.
We're definitely invested.
Yeah, and I think it's weird to me to think that we're coming up on 3 years doing this.
Are you depressed?
Well, no, it's interesting that we started at a time that there's really nothing going on with the Star Trek universe.
Yeah, it's quite true. And it was a perfect time to start a Star Trek podcast.
I don't know. Why did we start a Star Trek podcast?
Because of Ben Yong, actually.
Yeah.
It was his idea.
And he insisted on doing it.
Yeah.
And then he quit.
Yeah. His hiatus has been almost as long as the podcast now.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
But look, the fact that we're coming up on 3 years and we're going into a year where, look, we're going to have a new Star Trek series on air for the first time in more than a decade.
I can't wait. I've heard so many wonderful things that fill me with confidence.
You know what? I said it last year that, or I guess I said it earlier this year, that my expectations are way too high with Brian Fuller being attached, with Nick Meyer being attached, with Rod Roddenberry being attached as well.
Yeah.
You know, and look, it's only coming down when we hear kind of the news leaking out about Brian Fuller's departure, the people that they're bringing in, not his lieutenants, who I have the utmost respect for, the people that have worked with him over the years that are taking over as showrunners.
Right.
But some of the other people that are going to be involved now that Brian Fuller is departing.
The arrival of Akiva Goldsman scares the hell out of me.
I hope it's just a very limited role, but I don't know why they would announce his name or even attach him to this.
Why would you bring in the guy who's known for bombing genre stuff?
Yeah.
And who wrote and directed A Winter's Tale from last year and be like, yeah, this is the guy to lead the, you know, a visionary franchise. This is the man who wrote Lost in Space and Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
Like, good Lord.
I can only hope that, look, the showrunners can be the showrunners.
Yeah.
And he's there to, similar to what Nick Meyer is doing, is giving notes.
Sure. Yeah, I really want to read his notes.
It would be good for a laugh.
Yeah, he's the new Roberto Orsi in my eyes.
Yeah.
We can blame everything that goes wrong with this show if something goes wrong on him.
So, you know, it's going to be a fascinating year coming up, 2017.
Yeah.
We just capped off, I think, probably the most exciting year of Star Trek since we started doing the podcast. We had the 50th anniversary. I don't know how successful CBS and Paramount were at doing that, but we also had the release of Star Trek Beyond. And yeah. You and I, for the first time ever, we got to go to Las Vegas for the largest Star Trek convention in the world. We've been doing that for a number of years, but this is the first time we went up on stage and actually presented a panel.
Yeah.
So yeah, for listeners that are interested in maybe what we talked about, that's the episode called How Film Influenced Star Trek.
Yeah. I mean, when we recorded that episode, we'd gone through that panel about three or four times. So I can't say it was our most lively episode, but it was very much a very good encapsulation of what the panel was.
I believe that you caught me at a time I had just returned from Mexico.
Yeah, you were half asleep, as I recall.
I was. I had to be at work the next day.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe not my best effort, but look, we touch upon a lot of the great information that we're able to share in
right.
Las Vegas, and we actually had a good response. Look, there was a lot of attrition during the course of that panel, only because the Ferengis, one Max Grodinchek and Aaron Eisenberg, were actually up against them.
Sorry for leaving the stage.
Yeah. So I forgive you, Cam.
Yeah.
It's all in the past now. But the fact is we had a big turnout, and the people that did stick around that weren't interested in the Ferengis, look, they all had good things to say, and not just our friends there, but I don't know. I was very inspired to maybe pitch another idea. If they'll have us back in Vegas, I'd love to do it once
again. Sure, I guess we'll have to see where that goes. Who knows? Maybe we'll have an announcement in the coming months. And if we don't,
yeah,
you'll know why.
Yeah.
But, you know, this was an interesting year because, again, the 50th anniversary. Going into it, I really had big dreams of what this 50th anniversary was going to be. And we did an episode all about sort of the post-anniversary feeling, sort of the idea that maybe this anniversary didn't really live up to what we wanted it to. But there was a lot of cool stuff we got to do this year that maybe we wouldn't have gotten to do another year, like seeing the motion picture on the big screen. So I'll take those small little moments over, you know, I would rather have the big moments. But you know what? I'll take those small moments, and it gives me something to remember. And, you know, it gave some fodder for the podcast.
Yeah, and look, the fact that we're able to actually talk about this, because Star Trek's been an important, iconic franchise for 50 years.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, what are your dreams for the 51st anniversary, the year going forward?
Look, again, I don't want to lower my expectations too much for Discovery, but I think there's still potential for it to be a worthy successor, you know, to what we've had come before it.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope Star Trek Discovery is great. You and I, we're going to be podcasting about it. We're going to be podcasting about a Star Trek series week to week.
Yeah.
I don't think podcasts even existed back in 2005 when Enterprise went off the air. I certainly don't think...
No, I think they kind of first started coming around 2008?
Yeah.
7 or 8?
I think it was 2007, because I remember listening to the Ricky Gervais podcast, which was, I guess it's thought of as like the first breakthrough podcast, and I think that was 07, 08?
Yeah, I was listening to Kevin Smith's Smodcast.
Yeah.
Which was right around that period of time. So
look, Star Trek on the air, week to week reviews. That's something you and I are excited to tackle.
Very
it
much so.
Might be. I think we also have like bigger plans for expanding the Subspace Transmissions brand and offering
swimwear.
Yeah, it's similar to what Ben Sisko wore in Emissary.
We're wearing it right now. These are just prototypes, though.
Yes, but. You made me lose my train of thought, Cam. No, but I think what we're getting at is we're going to be able to offer kind of additional content, not necessarily just strictly podcast-based. And
it's a 1-900 number, isn't it?
Yes.
I don't
Very
remember,
sexy.
I don't remember signing up for this.
But I think it's going to be a fantastic year for... I can't imagine how 2017 won't shape up to be the strongest year yet for our podcast.
Sure. Why not?
Set the bar very high just so we can come crashing.
Yeah, exactly. Which is true to the podcast as it is. So why not?
So if we're thinking about other things that were fun for the Star Trek world in 2016, just kind of more pop culture talk. Cam, perhaps my favorite movie of the year so far in 2016, Manchester by the Sea.
Right.
That's just a movie that really stuck with me. I came out of the theater with a friend of the podcast, Julia Dilworth, and she said, and I didn't notice this, but apparently she was crying softly through the last like 20 minutes of it or so.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so that movie really affected her.
I did the same thing through Collateral Beauty this week.
But those are tears of joy.
Yeah.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
Did you actually watch Collateral Beauty?
I did.
What are your thoughts?
It's not good.
I could have told you that based on the trailer.
Yeah. It's a fascinating misfire in that the trailer's not selling what the movie is at all. It's actually far worse than what the trailer is selling.
Yeah, I read the plot twist.
Yeah.
And I was just like, glad I'm not watching that movie.
There's multiple plot twists, and each one is worse than the next.
Is this like, do you know the plot twist for Passengers? Because I've decided I'm not going to see that.
I haven't read them because I'm going to probably see it, I think.
Why torture yourself, Cameron?
I always write, every year I write my best and worst of the year list, so I feel like I have to see some of these movies.
You and I went and saw Blair Witch this year. Would that make your worst of?
Oh, yeah, big time.
That was, I'm trying to think. I try to stay away from movies I know that'll suck.
Right.
That would make my worst of list. So would Batman v Superman.
Does this mean you're not coming with me to Assassin's Creed on Christmas Day?
I'll leave that to you and your sister.
Sure, sure.
A Smith family tradition.
Sure, but let's get back to Manchester by the Sea.
I want to talk about Assassin's Creed in depth right here.
Because you bring that up for a very specific reason. Do you want to detail what that is?
Yeah, you know what? Like, it's a very touching movie, very moving movie.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a scene where one of the main characters' father has just passed away, and he invites his teenage friends over just for support and guidance, and they're just eating pizza, and it's not the way that grief is often portrayed on screen, which I can appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
And they just start talking about Star Trek, and they're all using their Massachusetts accents, you know, and they're using the R word. This is only in the context of the film. I usually wouldn't use this, you know, particular word, but their argument whether Star Trek's retarded.
Right, yeah.
You know, and look, whatever you think about that word, it was a very touching sort of movie scene because it just made those characters seem so human in this vulnerable state. And every, like, who can't relate to Star Trek? Who doesn't have an opinion on Star Trek? There's people that would say, nah, Star Trek sucks.
Right.
And yeah. Other people, you know, who that would like it. And I nobody does not have an opinion on Star Trek.
I once went out on a first date. It was a blind date. It was an online dating experience where the girl at dinner, and I never mentioned any interest in Star Trek or Star Wars or anything like that. She at one point, though, just dropped that. She said, I don't remember how it was brought up, but she said something like, I think anyone who would watch Star Trek is an idiot.
Mm.
And in my head, I went, oh, this isn't going to work. And I never revealed that I didn't, but I was like, this is probably not going to be. It was already not going that well. Yeah. I was like, a lot of red flags. And then that hit, and I was like, yo, I think I'm done. That's the KO.
She actually sounds like a good potential guest for the podcast.
Quite possible.
Get her to watch the series premiere of Star Trek Discovery with us.
I'll track her down on Facebook.
great exchange in Manchester by the Sea. And what it tells me is that it's a franchise in its 50th year.
Yeah.
And it's such a part of our, you know, pop culture world that we exist in at this point. And it's amazing. Like, it's not going to have the mass appeal ever that Star Wars has.
Right.
Rogue One just, like, $150 some million over this past weekend.
Which is, I think, more than Beyond made domestically in its total, in its entire run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's that. What'd you think of Rogue One, Cam? Because what I realized, though, is, like, we're going to get a Star Wars movie every single year.
Maybe two at some points.
Yeah, yeah, whereas with Star Trek films, who knows when.
We'll be lucky to get one per decade at a certain point. Yeah.
So, you know, the reason I asked, because I think this is a year where we can do Star Trek versus Star Wars. We did it last year with an overall discussion about those franchises. But let's say Star Trek Beyond versus Rogue One, a Star Wars story.
I would give Rogue One the slight edge. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a huge gulf between the two. I think Rogue One offered something that that Beyond didn't, which is it just had more ambition going forward. Like, yeah. The entire last hour of Rogue One was so fantastic and well executed and just hit all those geek buttons in a way that Beyond, even at its best, didn't quite for me. I think, Beyond does have something, though, that Rogue One, I think, faltered at, which is...
Characters?
Yes, the characters pop way more in Beyond. As well as the previous Star Wars movies. I think that was Rogue One's biggest fallacy, was that the characters just weren't as vibrant. But I think overall, in terms of filmmaking, the filmmaking in Rogue One impressed me far more than Beyond.
Well, the thing that I complained about Star Trek Beyond was the scale.
Yeah.
That's not a complaint I had when I walked out of Rogue One
at all. I felt like there was points in Rogue One where I was genuinely surprised by what I was seeing on screen.
Mm-hmm.
I never really felt that way in Beyond, outside of maybe the Yorktown sequence.
Right.
You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. You know what? I had the same reaction walking out of Star Wars as I did walking out of Star Trek this year, which was, that was okay.
Yeah.
You know, and I think I'm kind of in the minority because I've been listening to podcasts all week about Rogue One.
Yeah.
Every single person is through the roof about this.
Yeah, I wasn't through the roof.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just thought it was a really enjoyable movie. I think both it and Beyond are really enjoyable. But neither one of them is going to make my best of the year.
Well, yeah, I'll throw this to you, put you on the spot. You and I, we both rank Star Trek Beyond as number 5 among the Star Trek film series.
Right, yeah.
Which is funny because I think you were higher on Star Trek Beyond than I was,
yeah.
But we both ranked at number 5.
Yes.
Where would you put Rogue One, a Star Wars story, among all the films that have been released?
I would put it after the original trilogy and after Force Awakens, and then ahead of the prequels and the animated movie and the Ewok movies and all that stuff.
So it'd be number 5 for you as well?
Yeah.
Okay. I give the edge to Rogue One over the Force Awakens.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I mentioned this to you before, but I think the second time I watched Force Awakens, when I first came out of Force Awakens, I was very excited and very giddy. And the second time I watched it, I there was a big come down. One of the complaints was that it was derivative. But watching it again, I was just like, oh, this is even more derivative than I remembered. And there's just... So I definitely kind of... I wonder if I'm giving the recency bias to Rogue One at this point.
Well, I'll watch it a couple more times, and then you'll have to see how you feel.
Well, I may need to watch it at least once more over the holidays. But okay, so... If you want to throw it at me, Star Trek
Beyond versus Rogue One. I kind of had the same feeling. But there's something about Rogue One, I didn't quite connect to it on the character level. And yeah. When I'm watching films, that's the number one thing for me, is it being true to characters. And that's why I love Manchester by the Sea. Right. That movie just it hit me right in the gut. What a film there. And it's such a character-based film. So I kind of get the tiniest of edges to Star Trek Beyond.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, but I think filmmaking-wise, mm-hmm. far more mesmerized by this, because my other complaint about Beyond is I thought it looked a little cheap, especially considering its budget.
Yeah, it did. And, you know, one thing that kind of frustrates me about Beyond is I feel like going forward in this podcast, we are not going to have a lot of times where we're like, let's reflect on, you know, Star Trek Beyond. Like, it doesn't feel like it has the depth to kind of go back. Like, we've talked a lot about Wrath of Khan, Star Trek VI, even Generations we've talked about a lot.
That's true.
I don't know that I'm going to be flashing back to Beyond a lot in, like, moments of really, you know, in-depth discussion on Star Trek. Which, you know, hey, it was a minor hit. It entertained me. But I don't think it was Star Trek, you know, at its height. But no. Who knows?
Unless it's on a motorcycle height.
Well, yes, that's quite true, yeah. So, you know, hopefully Star Trek Discovery maybe delivers a little more, at least for the smarts and the sort of fodder for discussion.
Look, I don't think there's anything egregiously wrong with Star Trek Beyond, but mm-hmm. I think it's maybe not going to remain as one of the most iconic Star Trek films.
No.
What is it about a film like Star Trek Generations that we can go back to and discuss far more in depth than, say, a Star Trek Into Darkness, which, again, I think we both rank Star Trek Generations and Into Darkness as bottom-tier Star Trek films.
I think it's because neither one of them is very good, but they're trying for something kind of wildly ambitious or weird in their storytelling and not pulling it off. So it's really interesting to kind of dissect what went wrong.
But why is it? Why are we more drawn to Generations, which I think we both think is worse than Into Darkness, than, like, why don't we ever discuss Into Darkness on the show, but we bring up Generations all the time?
Generations is more fun to make fun of.
Is it?
Yeah, definitely.
I guess so. But, yeah. You know, it's much less directing-wise. Like, I think J.J. Abrams is a great director.
Mm-hmm.
That was not a great script that he was working with.
No, it was not.
You know, whereas I don't know if David Carson, when it comes to Star Trek directing, he did the best job. I just keep going back to the Picard and the rocks.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Not well done.
Would you say that Generations is a noble failure?
Noble? No. I think it's just kind of a bit of a belly flop.
But one of the things that I keep going back to is I was with that movie for the first hour.
Right.
As soon as you enter the Nexus.
You were really sucked in with that scene of Harriman with Chekhov and Scotty, huh?
Oh, you bet you.
Yeah.
Yeah. But once you get into the Nexus, the movie, I think, just completely falls apart. But
yes.
I think what I'm really getting at, though, is it's fun to see the next-gen crew on the big screen, having a big screen adventure.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, but that Nexus is just the dumbest thing ever.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
No. Okay. Well, Cam, overall, 2016, yay or nay to Star Trek?
Yay.
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 Not a huge yay, but like a decent one.
I think it was a best year yet since we've been doing the podcast.
Yeah, like a lot of the success of 2016 for me comes from podcast stuff we had happen.
Yeah.
And just sort of the minor fun experiences we had. And I'm looking forward to more of those in 2017.
What are we going to do if Star Trek Discovery sucks?
We're going to have a lot of fun podcasts.
I no doubt we're going to have fun making fun of it, but what does that also mean for fandom?
Nothing good.
But the thing is CBS, they've already, that series is already paid for based on licensing deals worldwide.
Yeah.
Having it on CBS All Access, and this is according to Les Moonves, president of head honcho over at CBS. He says the show's pretty much paid for.
Mm-hmm.
Just streaming it on CBS All Access, it's all just gravy on top.
Yeah.
If this is a show that's essentially paying for itself ad infinitum, I think it could be on the air for a very long period of time.
Well, we've seen Star Trek never starts well.
Yeah.
So if they're going to keep it on, hopefully it turns into something great. If it does start rocky, like tradition has shown that will be the case.
I just hope it's, right now, it seems so much like too many cooks in the kitchen at this point.
Right.
I'm fearful.
Well, we will see.
But from what we've heard so far with casting news, I'm pretty excited about what I'm hearing with the roles of Klingons, as well as some of the crew members that will be on board the Discovery.
It'll be interesting to talk about maybe some of those characters in the coming weeks.
Yeah.
Once we get into 2017.
I'm down. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this, though, because when we watch Star Trek Voyager, Star Trek Enterprise, they do not give those ships the definitive article whenever the characters refer to them. They never call it the Voyager or the Enterprise. They call it Voyager, Enterprise. Do you think this will be called the Discovery or just Discovery?
I think just Discovery.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I would say that's the lack of the definitive article. That's very much kind of a Brandon Braga era decision. Brandon Braga has nothing to do with it. So who's getting rid of the definitive article here?
Well, does that go back to like ships? Like people didn't call their ships, you know, at sea, the.
No, but in every other franchise, they called it the Enterprise. They called it the Defiant.
That's a good point, actually. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe that is a Brandon Braga thing.
All right. Well, this and other fascinating topics will be on hand in the new year.
This is a preview for what's to come, people. 2017 is going to be spectacular.
52 episodes of this.
Yeah, exactly.
Definitive versus indefinite articles.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah.
So is there anything else we need to touch on to wrap up 2016?
I'll just say this. I had a blast this year. I'm looking forward to expanding the Subspace Transmissions brands as we go on. I'm looking forward to watching, for the first time in a decade, Star Trek week to week.
Yeah.
That's going to be fun.
Yeah. It's going to be very exciting.
You've never done that before.
No, never. This is going to be an all new experience for me. I'm really looking forward to it. You know, other than just watching Cost of Living every week.
So. That's your Friday night ritual.
Exactly.
Okay.
Alone, crying into a pillow. Yeah. Okay. So, you know, this year we had a lot of fun podcasting, a lot of really strong episodes we talked about earlier in this episode. But Tyler, as is always the case, not all of the material recorded is, you know, the gold we need to make it to the finished product.
Yeah, you know what? I have to admit this. Benjamin Yong, he's not our fallen co-host. We cut everything that he says every single episode. He's been on the episode, the show the whole time. We just cut every single line.
Right, Ben?
Oh, just... you.
So we, of course, have our blooper reel from this year. And so, you know, let's just unroll the carpet for some of our greatest indignities.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions Pod at gmail.com.
Okay.
That's been the bloopers.
Yeah, there you go.
Hello and welcome to...
It's our own personal newsletter.
Oh boy.
Oh. Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast...
Come on, Cam. Oh my God. 50 years. It deserves more than this.
Okay.
You can find me at Reportin. That's Reportons. You can find me at Reportin. That's Reportons.
And scene.
Blooper reel.
Okay, I've got it. This isn't even that funny. Okay. You can find me at Reportin. That's Reporton. N is in nomination for hair and makeup. Well, I'm glad that Worf was able to escape his immortal enemies in that particular one. But one of his other immortal enemies... I keep saying enemies.
Good afternoon. Welcome to...
Good afternoon. Yeah, that's a Halloween idea.
The sun is shining on us, sir.
That's a good one.
It's scary to me because I'm a vampire and the sun is beaming down on me. Oh.
Okay.
Benjamin, I recall, you know, quite vividly, your own thoughts about Wesley that you've shared with me before. Tell me a little bit.
Oh my.
I don't even want to
staring at? What happened?
I don't know. It was getting like...
We've got a few bloopers here.
This is so stupid. Benjamin, tell me a little bit about... Okay, I'm fine, I'm fine. Benjamin, tell me, like, what you thought about Wesley when you were growing up. Cam, keep it together. I would have been fine, but you're like...
He's dying over here.
Just get it all out. Get it all out.
Oh, God.
Okay.
There you go. Ben, tell me a little bit about what you thought of... Jesus Christ, guys. Come on. I don't know why you are.
Oh, God.
It's not going to look over there. I can look over here.
Thank you.
Okay.
Cam, I can't believe you actually played that one of me. Thanks.
I've been saving it for a long time.
Yeah.
So we're going to sign off now. We'll say our mission is complete for 2016. Make sure to hang on till the very end of this episode because we'll have a surprise, much like we did last year for our best of. But if you enjoyed listening to this podcast this year, we would like to hear from you. Send your thoughts and feedback to subspacetransmissionspod@gmail.com. Tell us your favorite moments from 2016 for Trek. Heck, for the podcast. Either or. I'm not that picky. Tyler, what are we doing in the first episode of 2017?
Yeah, tune in during the first week of January. We're going to be discussing, having a lively debate about what was the best year for Star Trek.
1973.
Well, you already have an idea. I think what we'll do is take it decade by decade, mm-hmm. You know, pick out the best year in the 1960s, the 1970s, the 1980s, so on so forth. Once we can kind of figure that out, maybe we can pick out maybe the best year ever. Because, look, it's going to be interesting. There are some decades that were a bit of a desert.
Right.
You know, and some decades, I'm looking at the 1990s, where it was just to the brim full of content.
For sure, yeah.
So that'll be a fun episode. I'm really looking forward to that. We've got a whole bunch of really fun ideas set up for the rest of January. When it comes to February, don't even bother listening.
No, it's
we've
all
got nothing.
It's a wasteland.
Yeah, but by the time May comes around, Star Trek Discovery will be on. We'll be podcasting about that every week. And I think we'll have some little kind of mini episodes in there. Just like some of the smaller topics that cannot sustain itself for a full hour.
Yeah.
But something we could have fun with.
Best, worst, hairdos.
Stop looking at my notebook, Cam. Yeah.
So you can also reach us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam V as in very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, Smith.
You can find me at Reportin. That's REPORTONN as in.
So until next time, the arena is closed, and now let's unroll this year's Star Trek special song.
Hello. Don't be afraid. I'm the Traveler. I'm a friend. I'm going to take you on a wild, an exciting adventure far beyond the limits of anything you ever thought possible. Are you ready? Let's go. I'm a traveling man, doing what a traveler can. Won't you please take my hand? We'll journey off to far-off lands. To far-off lands. Please remember me, Wesley Crusher, phasing into this time for you. From Tau Ceti right across the Alpha, a one-man wolf drive right through and through. We're gonna go where no one has gone to, teach you to become something new. Exploring space, soaring through the cosmos, by journey's end, that's just what we'll do. I'm a traveling man, doing what a traveler can. Won't you please take my hand? We'll journey off to far-off lands. To far-off lands. Please remember me, Wesley Crusher. Alter Warp Fields, yes, just for you. Doorman 5, not our last adventure. Embrace it all, let your heart be true. First a cadet, now a virtuoso. Best there is Kaczynski, who. Believe in me, and I truly promise I'll give you more power than a cube. And now, straight from ancient San Francisco, give it up for Samuel Clemens.
Like a space age lord in a dapper gray suit. No care's gotta fly. Like a star he'll shoot. Time zero in a hurry. Getting blurry, never worry. Gazing into great wonder. Till he's ready to scurry. He's a trembling man. Firm brow and a dream. Like my homies Tom and Huck. Wes and him are a team. What?
Much respect, Sam. I'm a traveling man. Doing what a traveler can. Won't you please take my hand? We'll journey off to far-off lands. To far-off lands. Far-off lands. To far-off lands. To far-off lands.